Good afternoon and welcome to the LaRouche Show. It's July 29th, 2006. I'm Harley Schlanger and I will be your host today. We're in a truly remarkable moment in current history. We're first of all in the last days of the post-Bretton Woods financial system. It's unraveling and going through a process of disintegration precisely as forecast by Lyndon LaRouche. And this financial crisis, on top of a collapse of the physical economy worldwide and in the United States, is driving the synarchist financial elite toward a new world war. The goal of this war, which we'll explore today on the show, is the destruction of nation states to establish a fascist global economy run by international cartels, such as those represented by individuals such as Felix Rohatyn and George Shultz. And this is the reality of so-called globalization. Globalization is not a modern form of economic evolution, but it's actually a policy of global fascism based on all power to the cartels, the financial cartels, the raw material cartels, the insurance cartels, and so on. And this is what Lyndon LaRouche has identified as driving us into a new dark age, a cultural dark age, and the kind of dark age where we could see the world's population reduced to the level of a billion people. Now, in the face of this threat, there's been a deafening silence from the Democratic Party. But the glaring exception to this has been the activity of Lyndon LaRouche, who just did another webcast a little more than a week ago, and also the work of the LaRouche Youth Movement to create an alternative for the population, and in doing so, perhaps wake the Democratic Party out of its stupor. Now, to aid in mobilizing the population at this time, Lyndon LaRouche has just commissioned a special package for this week's Executive Intelligence Review on the theme, Know Your Enemy. Joining us today to discuss this is Michelle Steinberg, who's part of the team involved in putting this package together. Michelle is one of the longtime editors of the Executive Intelligence Review, who's been involved in writing on the Middle East in recent years. Michelle, welcome to the LaRouche Show.
Hi, Harley. I'm glad to be here today.
And also with us today will be members of our LaRouche Youth Movement panel. We have Michael Vandernat, who's with me out in Los Angeles, and Heather Detweiler, who's in Washington, D.C., and we'll be getting to them in a few moments. But Michelle, I want to get right to the start, right off the bat, on this question of the spreading war in Southwest Asia. LaRouche said on the Jack Stockwell show this week that Israel is on a suicide mission. Now, why is he saying that, and what's behind the decision of the Israel Defense Forces to go into Lebanon?
Well, Harley, Mr. LaRouche really hit the nail on the head and probably shocked a lot of people when he put out a memo early last week, just prior to his appearance on the Jack Stockwell show, in which he warned against anybody in the United States or anywhere else who blamed Israel for this war or even blamed the Cheney-Bush administration. And the title of LaRouche's memorandum commenting on this was Know Your Enemy. And this came as a shock and a wake-up call to a lot of people, even those who opposed the war. And let's make no mistake, the national armed forces of the country of Israel are right now being used by the international synarchy, bankers and financiers who have no loyalty to the state of Israel, but they have put themselves in a position of being able to manipulate some of the figures in the government of Israel to actually utilize the entire armed forces of that nation to destroy the infrastructure of a neighboring nation and to kill massive numbers of innocent civilians. And that is the Israeli attack on Lebanon. But what LaRouche's point is, know your enemy. You better darn well know and understand this time, unlike in the run-up to World War II, that there is an active international grouping of financiers, industrialists, at least they are industrialists to the extent that they own the controlling shares of industrial countries, and speculators who are determined to dictate policies over nations. And their aim is nothing less than a global war in order to preserve their power.
Right, now we'll take a look at that in just a second. I want to mention to our listeners that if you have questions for Michelle or the panel, you can email us. The email address is radio@larouchepub.com. That's radio@larouchepub.com. And we're interviewing today Michelle Steinberg from the EIR on the broader implications of the expanding war in Southwest Asia. Now, just to get back to one of the points you made in the beginning, that this is not a war in Israel's national interests or in the U.S. national interests. One would think that the Israeli general staff would know this. So what is it that's causing them to do this, and how does this relate to the program that your husband exposed a number of years ago, the Clean Break program?
There are people in Israel who are speaking as loudly as they can, but are being largely blacked out by the English language media and the European media. And these various intelligence professionals who have led Israel successfully through a number of dangerous situations are saying, this is insane. We're reattacking Lebanon, a country which we occupied for 18 years and had to leave. We could not destroy Hezbollah when we occupied the darn country, so what is going to make you think that we could destroy it now? Furthermore, the Israeli economy is bankrupt, etc. So there are Israeli voices saying that, and we can see from the on-the-ground situation, which we can get into a little bit later, that Israel really has had no military victory against Hezbollah in the whole past days of fighting, which began on July the 12th.
And Michelle, let me ask you a question on that, because on this question of military strategy, Lyndon LaRouche refers to this as asymmetrical warfare, and I think it would be useful for our listeners to get an understanding of what that means. So what do we mean when we say that Hezbollah is engaging in asymmetrical warfare?
Well, asymmetrical means that both sides are not equal, which anybody can see. Israel is probably the third or fourth most powerful military country in the entire world, right after the United States, Russia, probably China, and are about the same. And then Israel's right up there, third, fourth, fifth. We can quibble about that order, but it is very, very powerful. It has enough throw weight in its nuclear weapons to wipe all of Lebanon off the map and probably in 2 hours. So, there's no question about the military might here. What is it that asymmetrical warfare means? Well, asymmetrical warfare, which also goes by the name of guerrilla war or people's war, is a situation where the army that's being fought against represents a very serious support within a population, so that its soldiers, like the French resistance against the Nazis, are invisible by day. They can strike at any time because you don't know who they are. And they can use the principle of leverage, surprise attacks, and strategic pinpricks and skirmishes, if you will. Because when it comes down to man-to-man, as in a firefight that took place in southern Lebanon the other day, the Hezbollah, which means Army of God, guerrilla fighters in Lebanon, and the Israeli Army unit, I think they probably sustained about equal casualties. So that's what asymmetrical warfare is all about. It means conducting a war in a series of flanking actions, which really depend on the fact that you have the support of the population, which you're not using as human shields, but they are willingly actually protecting and hiding your efforts because they see a common interest. In this case, for Israel, Israel is seen as an invading power. And just the other day, the president of Syria, President Lahoud, said that at a certain point, the Lebanese army will be deployed.
You mean the president of Lebanon? You said Lahoud is president of Lebanon.
I'm sorry, yes. The Lebanese president, Emil Lahoud, said that the Lebanese army would be would join the fight against the invasion of its country.
And, Michelle, this kind of asymmetrical warfare is exactly what's hitting American troops in Iraq right now.
Exactly. But I think in this case, you're dealing with a, from the military experts that I've spoken to, U.S. military experts who've been shut out of the process largely by the neocons, they say Hezbollah is much stronger, much better prepared than the Iraqi resistance.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, the Israelis have walked into a situation which is a suicide mission for them.
And Lyndon LaRouche has also said that the Israelis were given an illusion from the United States that this would be cakewalk two, the way the U.S. thought that we could just go into Iraq, the Iraqis would crumble, and the people would welcome us. But wouldn't the Israelis know from their experience as an occupying force that the situation in Lebanon is very different?
You would think so. You would think so. But the power of delusion and the power of propaganda in this case, I think, really exceeded everybody's expectations in terms of how quickly the Israelis would succumb to their delusions. And I am personally, having worked very, very closely with true Israeli patriots, such as Maxim Gilan, who died a year ago, and also Rabbi Arthur Hertzberg, who died earlier this year, who really feared the kind of a religious fundamentalist ideology within the Jewish state as Nazis. Remember, Rabbi Hertzberg once said that all of these radical religious fundamentalists, they think God is Hitler, and they behave accordingly. And he meant the Jewish fundamentalists as well, the ones who killed Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Maxim Gilan also saw the seeds of this kind of crazy flight forward, and I am waiting for some other Israeli thinkers and intellectuals to speak more loudly than they have, because this really is a global operation, as Linda Lorsch puts it. And what we're looking at is the synarchist bankers planning to install fascist regimes throughout the world, including in Israel, including in Europe, including in the United States, as they did in the 1920s and 1930s. So the time for this anti-fascist resistance is really now, and one of the things that must be done is to stop the tools of these neocons, like Cheney, like Netanyahu, like kicking Felix Roatan and Lazard Frères out of the Democratic Party. We don't have time. We're running out of time to do this.
All right, let's complete the background picture now, because we saw the completely absurd position of Condoleezza Rice at Rome, where she said, in order to have enduring peace, we cannot have a ceasefire. President Bush has repeatedly said just nonsense about how in order to have peace, we have to have war. It makes George Orwell blush in his grave. But at the same time, the U.S. Congress has acted in a way that was characterized by LaRouche as a bunch of traitors. What's going on with the Senate and the Congress on this?
A couple of weeks ago, Mr. LaRouche wrote a piece called the strategic significance of the hit on India. He started out and said, I bring no good news. Only fools march to battle because the news is good. Wise men march with grim and resolute determination because they know the news is very bad. And then he begins, while most of the U.S. Congress has been virtually sleeping through a months-long lulling delusion like that which Neville Chamberlain carried back to London from Munich, the world has been lurching toward the brink of a crisis which must be compared at the very least to the brink of the outbreak of each of the two so-called world wars of the last century. And I urge everybody to read this piece in answer to the, to give a real answer to your question, but I'll hit on a couple of key points. That piece is posted on the website, LaRouchePub.com, the same website that hosts the LaRouche Show. And in that he talks about particularly the influence of Felix Roatan in the Democratic Party. And until that influence is purged completely, then you're not going to have a morality that stands up to the current crises. And when morality can't outweigh cowardice, you have a real problem. And that's what we're facing right here. Right? Along with morality, you need courage. And the Democratic Party is unfortunately corrupt to the extent that whenever an election rolls around, the people who should be leaders of the Democratic Party get down on their hands and knees and crawl to the nearest rich financier to get money to so-called win the election against the other syndicate fascists, which are the neoconservatives, Christian fundamentalists in the Republican Party. That's the dynamic that we have going on now. Now, LaRouche's solution to this is to know your enemy. And I hope we can get into that later because I just received the backup documentation piece that will go along with that by my husband and collaborator, Jeffrey Steinberg, which is The Enemy is Oligarchism.
Well, I think we should get into it right now. You're listening to Michelle Steinberg. This is the LaRouche Show. It's July 29th, 2006. We're talking about the absolutely breathtaking historic developments of the combined effects of the collapse of the financial system and the efforts of the financier oligarchy to defend their control of the system by plunging the world into chaos. We're seeing now also, I'll just mention this, we don't have to talk about it today, but the Horn of Africa, the escalation around Somalia and Ethiopia and Eritrea. You mentioned the bombing in Italy and Mumbai on the eve of the G8 summit. We're seeing in Afghanistan a situation out of control. Iraq is out of control. Cheney and Bolton are still talking as though they want to hit Iran. And we're seeing some resistance from Russia and elsewhere. But the question then is, who benefits from plunging the world into chaos? And I think it's in that context that we look at the continuing brilliant work by LaRouche in getting at the question of making clear what is the nature of the forces involved. And Michelle, from working on this Know Your Enemies piece, why don't you tell the listeners what's going to be in this package?
Well, immediately the first two items are Mr. LaRouche's very short memorandum, Know Your Enemy, and the second is the piece by Jeff Steinberg called The Enemy is Oligarchism, and I think they were still ironing out how the EIR articles would be packaged. But in the same issue of EIR, which is going to be a thoroughly composed issue on what is at work, you will also, my last updated report is that you will also have a piece by LaRouche on animations and the financial international breakdown. You will also have a piece by Muriel Murak-Weisbach from our European office, which is going to be another report from Lebanon incorporating the features of the LaRouche doctrine to discuss what a real solution to be, and then a piece by two of our investigative journalists on how the synarchists operate in this country of Israel, including some really eye-opening stuff about Ehud Barak, the last labor prime minister of Israel, who allowed Ariel Sharon to march with 3,000 armed men on the sacred site of the Temple Mount, as the Israelis call it, and trigger a whole new low-level intifada war. And Barack's ties to the synarchist banking network are going to be a real opener, and there's some eye-opening matters about good old Shimon Peres, who was deeply involved in the Oslo peace process but has turned his back on that kind of nation-building since.
I think that
death
really...
of his friend Rabin.
Yeah, that really brings to the forefront the courage of Rabin, who actually held Peres's bad side in check and got him organizing effectively. But we could do a whole another program on Oslo, and actually it is just worth mentioning that had the Oslo Accords been followed through, specifically the economic accords that were drafted and modeled on Lyndon LaRouche's OASIS plan for the Middle East, we probably would be talking about a whole different situation right now in the region.
Yeah, Harley, let me add one other thing. It was very alarming to see that at one of the biggest peace marches in a long time, a significant peace march which took place in, I think it was Tel Aviv, there were peace marches inside Israel over the place. One of the alarming things about it was that a lot of the speakers and the resistors to the kind of civilian war Israel's conducting in Lebanon, they were saying, we won't fight Bush's war. So, and then you have certain populist elements in the United States saying the United States shouldn't fight Israel's war. Like, can't you see how these populists are being now trapped in exactly what the synarchists, love to see? They love mm-hmm. to see the more concerned citizens of either country blaming some fall guy like another country that they're manipulating behind the scenes. So let me get to the history of this as soon as possible. Would this be a good time? Because it's really crucial.
Well, what I'd like to do is just get a quick report from on the scene in Washington, D.C., where we've had a series of meetings with representatives of labor unions, state representatives, city officials, and members of the LaRouche Youth Movement to try to bring the reality of the role of Roatan and the synarchists in tearing down the U.S. industry, tearing down the auto sector, the steel sector, the mining sector, wrecking the U.S. economy and the U.S. as a sovereign nation state. This was brought to the fore with the lobbying that went around the Week of Action, and Heather Detweiler is with us. Heather, can you give us a summary of the effectiveness of the deployments during the Week of Action and the lobbying?
Yeah, sure. Well, Michelle did a very excellent job of sort of describing the state of mind of the Democratic Party. Because in a time period of history like this, you're dealing with a very ripe organizing environment, but at the same time, it's a very difficult one because you largely have a population, not only around the country, but even the population of D.C., that is not only very angry, but it's very fearful of what the future holds. And one of the most effective ways of organizing a population that's in that kind of a state of mind is you have to try to elevate the conceptual powers of the population to be able to conceptualize for themselves what's actually occurring right now in history. And one of the things I know the youth movement nationally has been doing, particularly in D.C., is we've been making clear to members of Congress, to top staff members, to people in institutions on the street, that what's standing in the way of rendering this administration completely impotent is Felix Rohatyn. And that kind of throws people for a loop. But it's a cause for investigation because this is the guy who's the main obstacle for the Democratic Party, so that it's the main obstacle to create the type of leadership that we need coming out of the Democratic Party to actually fight fascism. And one of the problems I know we're running into in Washington, even if you have a room full of labor officials who are saying, look, we're losing our jobs, we're losing our pensions, LaRouche has a bill, we need your help, The biggest problem is, one, fear to actually fight fascism, and this is where the Rahatan question comes in. We can get rid of that. But the harder thing to deal with is a lack of understanding of history, particularly American history. People don't really know what fascism is, and particularly they don't understand the battle that's been waged since the American Revolution between the American system and oligarchism. So that's one of the main things we're doing here in D.C. is we're going after Rohatyn, but we're also trying to wage a campaign of education to try to really get people to understand the historical moment we're living in and what we're actually dealing with, which is fascism.
And let me get to our West Coast correspondent today, Mike Vandernat, who I know has some astute observations on the particular kinds of cultural delusions from the Hollywood crowd on this question of understanding history. Mike, what kind of response are we getting in the organizing on the campuses and the streets in the Los Angeles area?
Well, we are on the campuses somewhat during the summer session, but generally on the coastal cities and in the few campuses that are busy enough for us, I think that Heather's right that people generally don't understand their own history. And so the kind of things, if we can provoke people and open that door, you know, using the idea of the administration of Roosevelt, using Roosevelt as an exemplar of how we can mobilize against oligarchism, using the federal government, showing people how the Democratic Party itself was trying to run a coup against Roosevelt, bringing this history into people's minds allows them to be able to recognize what they're living through today. And so that, you know, rather than just kind of assuming that people, rather than assuming that people understand things the way you do and making comments about Israel or about the economy, you really have to help people a lot by helping them understand their history.
Are you finding, Mike, that people are quite upset or concerned about the spreading of the war?
Well, to be honest, I think that some people, most people generally that we're speaking to, are insensitive to the fact that this is a potential outbreak of a third world war. And that's why I think our job is so necessary, why it's so important for us to be out there.
And Heather, what about I assume in D.C. it's probably a little more clear that this is, just because all the talking heads and everything, that this is a dangerous situation, or am I wrong on that?
Well, among the youth population, it's more along the lines of what Mike is discussing, but if you're doing a more institutional deployment in downtown D.C., you never know who you run into. You could be running into someone from the military, from intelligence, you know, things like that. But in institutional D.C., people are more willing to look at the potential that this represents. However, there is a sense of smallness that they can't, that you, this is a process which is emotion, it's inevitable, there's nothing you can do to change it. It's what Lynn LaRouche describes as sophistry.
We're about to go into a station break, and I do want to come back to that because that gets to the question Michelle posed just a minute ago on the history. So we'll be back, and very briefly, this is the LaRouche Show. It's Saturday, July 29th, 2006. I'm Harley Schlanger. The LaRouche Show is live on the web every Saturday from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And if you can't hear it live, you can pick it up on the archive on LaRouchePub.com. Much of what Michelle has been talking about and we've been discussing is available either on the LaRouchePack.com website or LaRouchePub.com website, which is a website associated with the Executive Intelligence Review and Executive Intelligence Online. Now, if you want some of the material that Michelle has been discussing, the most recent white papers on Rohatyn, the fight between LaRouche and the FDR model versus Rohatyn and the synarchist Hitler model, give us a call. We have reports coming out virtually every other week right now at 800-929-7566. These are available. You can get your friends to listen to the LaRouche Show and then call in for literature. And they can call in a contribution because it's going to take a lot of money to win this fight. So you can get to us at 800-929-7566 and use the LaRouche Show to organize people. You can put it on a CD and send it around to your friends, or you can send them a link via the Internet. So we're back now. We're talking with Michelle Steinberg. Also, we have Heather Detweiler and Michael Vandernat as our LaRouche Youth Movement panelists. Michelle, both Heather and Mike referred to the fact that the American people are woefully ignorant of the actual history of the Middle East, and as a result, they're easily played upon. I mean, I'll give you a brief anecdote. I gave a speech about a year ago at a campus, and someone said, well, how can you say there's going to be peace between Jews and Muslims? They've been fighting since the time of Jesus Christ. And here was someone who didn't realize that the Prophet Muhammad and the religion of Islam did not come around until over 600 years later. I just did a class on this, on the question of how the British have used the sophistry to transform a conception of the religions, the three religions from the Holy Land, to manipulate people. And you and I were talking beforehand about the problem of the Christian fundamentalists in this country. So it's a huge topic, but why don't you hone in on what are the essential axioms that are used to get people into either a passive state or choosing sides in a way that loses the broader picture?
Okay, the first is I'm going to address two things in this. All right, we're here talking about the current Israel-Lebanese war, which kicked off July 12th, kind of surprised a lot of people. And then Lyndon LaRouche came along and said, don't look at this as a Middle East thing. This is a global war. Virtually the same day as Israeli planes started bombing bridges, hospitals, milk trucks, little children in school buses in Lebanon, you had this horrendous bombing of the trains in the Indian city of Mumbai, or Bombay as it's called, which LaRouche said this is the first act of these two events taken in combination are the onset of a global World War III. So the first problem is that people think about the world chopped up in little bits, and they depend too much on the television and the media. They should read more, use their minds. And therefore, they never have a full picture of what's going on. This war, this use of the Israeli army to conduct this war was hatched in a certain way. Certain particulars of it were hatched in Beaver Creek, Colorado, on the weekend of June, I think it was the 16th and 17th, 2006, when Benjamin Netanyahu, a true Israeli fascist follower of Vladimir Jabotinsky, went there to meet with Dick Cheney, a true American fascist from the tradition of Leo Strauss, the neoconservatives, although he's probably too stupid to retain much of the particulars of this. But they met in Colorado, and they came up with a fallback option because it looked like at that time in mid-June that Cheney's desire to have the United States attack the country of Iran was on the back burner for the time being. So this is what we're talking about. Why don't the American people recognize this? First of all, they don't understand the relationship between war and oligarchism and synarchy, the financial collapse. The second reason is something that was called the Congress on Cultural Freedom, a popular culture / religious movement that was launched by the synarchy using intelligence agencies of Britain and the United States and academia back in the 1940s to destroy Western civilization's belief in the dignity of man and the belief in industrial progress and nation states. And those two factors together have made the world a pretty stupid place when it comes to the general population. So on the other hand, in the tradition of the great poet Percy Bysshe Shelley. He did say in the essay, In Defense of Poetry, that it is times of crisis that human beings can assimilate profound ideas much more quickly. So now's the time to outreach to the population because their illusions are being busted, and they can help us. They can become a potent force in the world. As Shelley said in the poem, The Mask of Anarchy, we are many, we, the people, are many, they, the controllers, are few.
Now, Michelle, you just covered an enormous amount, but I would refer people to... Huh?
I'm sorry about that.
that's necessary, and that's the nature of the show, because our job is to get people to do some homework. And I will refer people to the interview that Lyndon LaRouche did with Jack Stockwell, which is up on our site, I think, and also his latest paper, Why the Senate's Intelligence Has Failed, Reanimating an Actual Economy. Because the problem, it's one thing to say that we have a cultural degeneration. The boomer generation went for pleasure and pot and has never recovered. It's legitimate to say the generation went to pot. But the problem then is, what is a normal state of human creativity? And this is a little more difficult, and this is where the work that's being done, the intellectual work of the LaRouche Youth Movement, represents the alternative. And I know, Heather, there have been some discussions among the members of the LaRouche Youth Movement on the East Coast around the last weekend's Cadre School and around the work done by Lynn recently to pick up this question of creativity. Can you give us a little bit of a report on the intellectual ferment that's essential for not just a recruitment process, but to bring people into the kind of thinking that Michelle's talking about?
Well, one of the most effective things, Mike might have something different to report, but I know one of the most effective things on the East Coast has been the music work. What we find is that, you know, many, many people from my generation, including myself, you know, we never sang. We never came up in any type of an artistic environment. However, through working on Bach's The Asian Freuden Motet, and getting new young people just off the streets learning how to sing, mastering their voices, and actually learning how to sing through polyphony in different voices, and really experimentally looking at classical music, you find that people's organizing improves. You find that also people's ability to conceptualize their role in history increases as they get a better self-confidence of what their mind is actually capable of doing. So I would say that's been one of the most important things we've been doing, is this work on the motet.
Mm-hmm. And Michael, do you want to add anything?
I agree with Heather. We're trying to stress the music work here. Mm-hmm. I remember LaRouche saying that it was the most important social process that we have. And, you know, it's an important point of inflection where people can, like she said, recognize their own creativity. Because only through that will you be able to get people to think creatively about other things, about, like she said, the role in history, what we're capable of right now politically. Sometimes people in our generation are prey to this sophistry, and so they impose mental limitations where they start to think of what's plausible, what's practical. I don't think we can ever accomplish these goals. But, you know, you've got to get people thinking creatively and learning real examples from history where these activities have succeeded.
Well, Michelle, I think I read somewhere that Trent Lott has a barbershop quartet. Perhaps we should be challenging members of the U.S. Senate instead to take up the Jesu Minor Freude. What do you think?
Well, they should certainly listen to the LaRouche Youth Movement chorus, invite them into the rotunda or something to do that transparent performance. You know, the barbershop quartet down Row, Row, Row Your Boat to Hell would be, you know, Row, Row, Row Your Boat's a little round that barbershop quartets used to like to sing. And Rowing Your Boat into Hell is what these senators are doing. You know,
Lynn had a proposal for them, Michelle. They can do the old country song, I'm a Born Loser.
Born to Lose, and now I'm losing everything,
yeah.
Right?
Well, so, to get back then, I mean, this is, if you think about it, what Heather and Michael just said is that you need a different quality of mind to actually conceptualize what is the real mission for humanity. Now, what can people do? Here we have a situation where the Congress is on its back. The president is an insane nut job. The vice president sits down with Netanyahu like a couple of mafia thugs, saying the boss wants us to whack Lebanon, and Netanyahu says, yeah, tell the boss it's done. How do you intervene? What is it that Lyndon LaRouche is doing that gives us an opportunity to reverse this?
Well, if you look at our activities globally over the last week, you get the sense of a starting point, which we've got to quickly turn into a multiplier effect. That is, what I'm going to tell you that we accomplished this last week, we want to see that happen 10 times over, and then the next week maybe 100 times over. And it's got to be well thought out strategically. But we engaged Felix Rojas and leaders in a very quick educational process to say there is no BS about this. You have to tell Israel to stop bombing this country immediately. Stop killing these civilians. And when they come back and say, well, you're being soft on the terrorists, there have been terms of negotiation offered. Hezbollah is part of the government of Lebanon. They were elected in the democratic elections that the Bush administration insisted to take place. So what George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and company are trying to do is to basically bomb one of the major parties of the country of Lebanon. They don't believe in, the synarchists don't believe in democracy at all. So now, first off, if you are in between the ages of 18 and 25, call that toll-free number. Get in touch with the LaRouche Youth Movement. Come to their meetings, their activities. If you are in an older age bracket, and you know, listen, if you're under 30 and you want to call and check in, we might have a place for you in the youth movement. But for people of the boomer generation, the World War II generation, the tweeners, etc., you can immediately begin to help us distribute the literature on Felix Rohatyn's Nazi connections. It's all documented with U.S. government documentation, and begin intervening. Look, every county in the United States pretty much has a Democratic Party. Get to their next meeting. Demand that they discuss the issues that LaRouche is talking about. Get in touch with our local office. And as I'm saying this, Harley, could you say that number again, and then I'll say what we were able to accomplish this week.
Sure. The number people can call is 800-929-7566. And if you say you heard about this on the LaRouche Show, we'll send you some literature to look at to get you started. And if you need more, just let us know, because we're going to be – Lyndon LaRouche wants to start putting out at least 250,000 of these white papers every week. We don't have the capability of doing that right now because we've got a financial problem we've got to deal with. So you can help with that also. But it's a toll-free call, 800-929-7566.
So to give you an idea of what the last 10 days have looked like in terms of this this movement, in Washington, D.C., the LaRouche Youth Movement, otherwise known as the LYM, L-Y-M, along with trade unionists and elected officials, Democratic elected officials, met with, I believe it turned out to be 36 congressional offices to have in-depth discussions about LaRouche's reconstruction plan, the new Bretton Woods, etc. In Germany, Helga Zepp LaRouche, the chairman of the Buso political party there, and the LYM, L-Y-M, LaRouche Youth Movement candidate for mayor of Berlin, Daniel Buchmann, and the LaRouche Movement's collaborator and candidate for president of France, Jacques Cheminade, held a very successful press conference in Berlin to discuss who's really behind the Lebanon war and what measures need to be taken to stop it. Lynn has always said from the time of the Iraq War, the only way to stabilize the Middle East is to have a two-state solution where the dignity and the sovereignty of the Palestinians is restored immediately. That's the only starting point for any durable Middle East peace. So Condi Rice can put that in her hat or pipe or whatever she uses to smoke and smoke it. All right, so that was Berlin. Down in Ibero-America, in the city of Cordoba, Argentina, you had a contingent of the LaRouche Youth Movement there attending the president's meeting, the summit meeting of the countries of Mercosur, which is an economic bloc of the countries of Ibero-America. They did a master distribution of LaRouche's plan for issuing productive credit for the continent, and that is the Operation Horus plan. Nations can create credit. Bankers and speculators, they eat credit and withhold it from the productive economy. That's a big major difference. Then in Russia, I'm talking Moscow here, you had two things going on. Sometime over the last 10 days, you had LaRouche collaborators and co-thinkers doing a major international webcast there discussing the Bush administration, LaRouche's role in the United States, and what a real economic expansion plan would be. And then you had another dialogue in a magazine called Zavtra with LaRouche's collaborator, Jonathan Tenenbaum, who's based in Berlin, Germany. Then in Mexico, you had a very, very interesting encounter between the LaRouche Youth Movement and the real president of Mexico. He has not been declared the loser, but in fact he is the winner in the same way that George W. Bush did not win the 2000 election or the 2004 election. Calderon did not win the Mexican election. So the LaRouche Youth Movement had a very interesting exchange with the PRD candidate, López Obrador, who is challenging that election, in which they gave him LaRouche's literature, and he had a very, very positive response. Throughout Washington, you had LaRouche Youth Movement interventions with the Democratic Party at very, very important events, such as the House Armed Services Committee. Our literature is everywhere, and this is just the beginning. Now,
Michelle, let me mention one thing to go back to López Obrador. Tomorrow in Mexico City, there's a demonstration scheduled. They're hoping to top the 1.5 million who attended 2 weeks ago to keep the mobilization going to count the vote. There's also going to be a demonstration in the city of Los Angeles with LaRouche Youth Movement members have been mobilizing to bring supporters of López Obrador and just people who recognize that Calderon represents the same kind of synarchist fascist policy that's destroyed Mexico under the Fox regime. And so if people want information on that rally, they can call the same number, the 800-929-7566 number. We're running, we're down to about 12 minutes, Michelle, and I wanted to have a chance for both Heather and Michael. I know they had some questions for you. If you can just summarize the point you were making, then we can go back to a roundtable.
Great. I can go on about, you know, what can people do by giving you an idea, continuing to give you an idea. We have addressed via radio the nation of the Philippines, where LaRouche has a lot of collaborators, and the elites are listening every week to the radio show hosted by Butch Valdez there. And from our U.S. base and European base, we are in daily contact with veterans of various governments, especially as concerns Southwest Asia, North Africa, the area known as the Middle East. We are in constant dialogue with diplomats, university professors, and people on the ground to keep a very, very accurate picture of the war crimes that are being committed by the people who are being used by these synarchists. And and we're constantly briefing and taking information that needs to get out publicly from the representatives of these various nations to put in our publications EIR. So there, I could go on for, you know, two or the time allotted to two or three shows in terms of what we're doing. But I do it to give everyone a very, very clear idea that we're a global movement. And we're just having an incredible effect with a small number of people. So join us, contribute, get this literature out, and we will be a even larger organization than we are now.
Well, what you're basically saying is that we're fighting to save this nation because of its historic role worldwide and the potential, and people should join us. No one should sit around whining and moaning and complaining and saying, they're doing this, they're too powerful. You want to do something, you can. And I think it's inspirational for people to get that picture of the global deployment, and especially to hear that there are young people, 18, 19, 20, 21, who are challenging the Congress to do something. So we have just a little more than, or a little less than 10 minutes. Heather, did you have a question or a comment for Michelle?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I just recently reread, probably the first time in 2 years I reread the Southwest Asia Doctrine that LaRouche put out for peace, or the beginning of a peace process in the Middle East. And I just had a couple of quick questions. One, I wanted to know, given what's happening now in the Middle East, how closely or what's the process that's going on with some of our top military and intelligence contacts around that? And secondly, is there anything that LaRouche stated in the policy of the peace proposal that he would say a little bit differently now? Because it seems that if we can kick the Democratic Party in the right direction, this would be the type of policy, other than a reindustrialization policy, that we would want these guys to go with.
I think on the first part, our military and intelligence contacts, they really depend on us. They have been to Congress up the wazoo, so to speak. They have talked to the senators and the congressmen in the Democratic Party who they had great hopes for, and you know, they're kind of frustrated at this point, because they don't see the political institutions picking up on what these military and intelligence people have provided to the public. You know, people like Larry Wilkerson and General Newbold, and these were some of the people who were actually involved in the decision-making in the Bush administration. So they're looking to us much more. Secondly, on the peace process itself, look, one of the things that LaRouche wrote in that doctrine is he dealt with mainly axioms. And some of the things have gotten so bad since then. The level of trust has been so... the trust that Muslims, what they call the Arab street, so to speak, you know, the ordinary people in the Muslim world, they're haters of the United States, and to the extent that they don't know that LaRouche exists or that we exist, they have no idea what the real America represents. So this really represents a challenge. And when I said earlier, echoing Mr. LaRouche, that time is running out, this really presents a bigger challenge than it did 2 years ago, much bigger. So we have to win the fight in the United States. There is no other quarter where it can be done, and I think there is still some hope and some time, but as I can't say often enough, time is running out.
Yeah, we're at about a split second before midnight on the global situation. Michael, did you have a question for Michelle?
Yeah, some of the questions I thought of earlier have been taken up. I wanted to ask a question to Heather about what's happening in D.C., and that is, I read recently about a conference that the DLC sponsored where they were also defending Israel's actions and saying that they have to escalate and they can't stop just shy of a victory against terrorism and this kind of rhetoric. I was wondering, have we created a significant fight in the halls of Congress playing this, you know, exposing the fraud of the DLC? Does that come up, and could you take up that?
Oh yeah, it's actually it's increasingly becoming a big part of the organizing, because at a certain point LaRouche had even declared this during after the Social Security fight. after the fight over the nuclear option, and we saved the filibuster, the Democrat, you know, LaRouche said the DLC's dead. But once Rohatyn really came into the picture around LaRouche trying to save the auto sector, which was over a year ago, with his Recreate Our Economy pamphlet, the DLC started to resurface again in a big way precisely because of Rohatyn. So one of the things that we're doing is we're see, the DLC is trying to recruit youth, and they have this Truman, Harry S. Truman National Security Project, where they're specifically targeting congressional staffers under 30. We were at their event. We intervened in the event. And basically what we're doing is making it clear that the Democratic Party policy is not one of SUV dads and soccer moms, but it's actually what Franklin Roosevelt represented. So, yeah, we're making that point very clear because, as you can tell from some of the speeches that Hillary Clinton and others have given, they're trying to go back to this real loser strategy of going catering towards the upper 20%, which is just straight Rohatyn and DLC. So we're taking that up in a big way in meetings on Congress as well.
I'll just mention one thing on that from what Lyndon LaRouche had to say in the last 24 to 48 hours, that the Democratic Party has adopted a posture since the beginning of 2006 of recruiting, of fundraising from the upper 5% of family income brackets, with the idea that that would enable them to compete for votes in the upper 20% of family income brackets. And so here we are on with the potential for a Democratic Party sweep, because the people in this country are sick of Bush, they're sick of Cheney. The Republican Senate and House have done nothing but give tax breaks to the most wealthy, destroy the Social Security net or the social safety net. And yet the Democrats, instead of going out and reaching out, having an outreach plan for the people who live in the lower 80% of family income brackets, they're not doing that. Now, that's what the LaRouche Youth Movement has uniquely targeted, by bringing people in, not just as voters and saying, here's a nice little package to vote for, but actually saying, it's your country, learn what your role is, figure out how citizens function in a republic, and join us. That's the only way that we're going to get it to sweep this monstrous regime out in Washington. Otherwise, Michelle, what's the prognosis? LaRouche says we're heading into a dark age. What would you have to say about that?
Well, I want to go to the upcoming article from Jeffrey Steinberg, which begins with a quote from a memorandum which was prepared in November 1940 for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And I would say that the picture that we face today is of the same magnitude that FDR faced when he was elected and had to face the inauguration in 1932. He had to wait for his inauguration. He did it then. Lyndon LaRouche can do it now. The key is to know your enemy, and what I'm going to read you now hopefully helps do that. This memorandum to FDR, written from France in November 1940, says, the reactionary movement known as Synarchy has been in existence in France for nearly a century. Its aim has always been to carry out a bloodless revolution inspired by the upper classes, aimed at producing a form of government by technicians, under which home and foreign policy would be subordinated to international economy. The aim of the Bank Worms, that's spelled like worms, W-O-R-M-S. Let me begin again. The aims of the Bank Worms group are the aims that are the same as those of Synarchy. And the leaders of the two groups are, in most cases, identical, end quote. In other documents prepared for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in that same time period, André Maillard, the founder of Lazard Frères, which runs the finances for the Washington Post Group, for example, and
Michelle,
which...
I hate to do this, but we're down to about 30 seconds. Hopefully you're whetting the appetite of the listeners of this show this report is dynamite because it gives the actual quotes from the intelligence in the United States, the intelligence community, identifying the synarchists of the 40s, and we show how the Roatan-Schultz operation is the same today. So I'm sorry I had to cut you off, Michelle,
No problem. But
we're about to go. Thanks for joining us, Heather and Mike. Thank you also. And thanks to our listeners for joining the LaRouche Show today. And we're done.